This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor super fan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in. Can you feel it? It's almost opening day, one day away from the start of the Major League Baseball season and the start of Royals baseball right here on KFH. We'll have plenty on the Royals coming up over the next couple of hours. We'll get you ready for the Sweet 16 and March Madness. The NFL free agency season is sort of heating back up. A couple of big significant signings yesterday. And of course, the transfer portal is in full effect. We've got a lot to cover today. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster here with you on KFH. 97.5 FM, 1240 AM. That's where you're listening to us, and that's where you can call us at 869-1240. You can also leave us your messages. Thanks for watching us on 12 News Connected. Facebook, YouTube, X, whatever it is that you use to watch us, we appreciate that as well. And we'll get to your video comments there. You can also leave us voicemails, voice messages on the Odyssey app. We know a lot of you listen to us that way through the podcast or whatever it might be. You can do that easily. Just hit the little microphone and leave us a message. We're here to chat with you. We're getting close to what could be the best sports day on the calendar this year. The start of Major League Baseball. The start of the Sweet 16 on a collision course. And here we go. Welcome in. Max Power producing. That's Tommy Caster. Hey, Tommy, good morning.
Man, we are getting close to your point. I mean, 24 hours or so from opening day, Major League Baseball, right into the Sweet 16 games. I think the more that I've thought about it, I think it is probably top three as far as like biggest sporting days of the year. It's probably that. It's probably Super Bowl Sunday. And then, I don't know, opening weekend of NFL probably around there too.
Opening Sunday of the NFL. Or if you want to like get real nerdy, your big like fantasy football draft, any of the like fantasy football draft season, like that, you know, week, right? That's also a really fun time for me.
Yeah. But you get into Major League Baseball and then college basketball all in the same day. It's like those days around Thanksgiving when you've got like conference college football games, and you've got the holiday basketball tournaments, and you've got NFL. Like that's to me, like this is kind of the same sort of feeling.
But with more on the line as far as basketball to some degree. I mean, we were joking when we were out at the NCAA tournament last week that we would write people you know, doctor's notes, hooky notes. I might need you to write me one, Tommy. I don't want to work. No, it'll be all right. We'll be at work for it. We'll power through. It's one of the things about opening day. You know, they open it up at 3 o'clock. I don't have a problem with it. You got a better chance for good weather. It won't be so cold. So I understand it. But man, we're ready for opening day, and we'll talk some Royals here over the next couple hours as we continue to prepare for that. Shreyas Lada is going to join us in the next hour. He'll talk to us about the portal. And there's this collision course now. A, what is KU doing in the portal? And then some news we'll get to in just a few minutes from the Shockers' perspective as they lose a key piece in Quincy Ballard. Man, I wonder if KU doesn't have interest in Quincy Ballard, number one. Number two, that is a gut punch for the Shockers. I mean, that is brutal to know that he's planning on coming back to college basketball, but not to Wichita State. Shouldn't surprise us all that much. But he is going to flourish somewhere, I'm pretty sure. And it's not going to be at Charles Koch Arena. And that's disappointing. But we'll get into the implications of that. That was the big portal news yesterday. Otherwise, it's been kind of quiet for the portal players we're watching for Wichita State, K-State, KU. Giannis Bamba also got in. Of course, not a key contributor for the Shockers last year. But, man, here comes the portal season, and there will be a lot of work to do for a lot of teams. So Shreyas Lada is going to help us join us to help us talk about that in the second hour as it pertains to KU. And then some NFL signings yesterday, Tommy, as we take a bird's eye look at everything. Russell Wilson to the Giants. Does that take away, does that take away potential landing spot for Aaron Rodgers? Does that impact the draft and what might happen in the draft? Possibly. We'll discuss. And then Steph Diggs to the Patriots. A little credit to the Patriots here for trying to help Drake May out. Steph Diggs was really, really good last year before he got hurt. So that's an interesting signing there as well. Neither of those are needle moving as it pertains to the Chiefs' chances, but significant.
Yeah, there are a couple of those deals that were done yesterday. I think to answer your questions very quickly, it does eliminate a landing spot for Aaron Rodgers. I mean, I think it's at this point Pittsburgh or bust. For Aaron Rodgers, in the NFL next season. And then Steph Diggs going to the Patriots. I mean, I think that, him going to the division rival of the team that he, basically helped put on the map with the Buffalo Bills is interesting. But they're definitely trying to find additional weapons for Drake May, trying to build the team around Drake May, having a veteran wide receiver around a guy like May, who they feel like is their franchise quarterback long term. I think it's a smart move for them. They've been mildly aggressive this offseason, the Patriots have been. I don't know if it's going to be enough to get them back into the playoff hunt this season, but at least they're putting the pieces together, the building blocks together for a foundation for the future for this team.
Yeah, it's a good thing for Drake May. Doesn't mean a whole lot. I look at the other one, though. Russell Wilson to the Giants. It's not just that Rodgers has only one landing spot potentially. What else are the Steelers going to do now? Russell Wilson's off the table.
Well, yeah, and Justin Fields has been off the table for a minute now.
It makes them as desperate as Aaron Rodgers potentially. Like, what are they going to do?
Yeah, and honestly, I don't blame Russell Wilson, because I feel like there was maybe this, mentality for a minute of, the Steelers maybe hedging a little bit and like, well, we've still got Russell Wilson in our back pocket. If it doesn't work out with Aaron Rodgers, we'll wait Rodgers out. And then Russell Wilson's like, you know what? Sorry, guys. Like, I'm bouncing. I'm out of here.
I don't want to give Russell Wilson that much credit. Like, he just went where somebody was going to pay him. I don't know that it was like he'll have to compete with Jameis Winston for a job there, by the way. I think it probably does tell us the Giants aren't going to take a quarterback.
Well, for sure. They're not going to take a Shedeur Sanders or a Cam Ward early. Like, they're not going to
chain this.
Yeah, they're not going to do that.
If you were going to do that, you'd have just rode out with Jameis. So now they tip their hand a little bit. Does anybody trade up? Is this a position where the Steelers need to like cash it all in and go after one of them? Maybe that's their plan. I don't know, but they don't have a lot of options here. I don't think. I still think their best option is to go acquire Derek Carr from the Saints. I've always thought that was their best option, but Rodgers is, simpler, and we'll see. It's time to get
that
done.
What kind of world are we living in when Aaron Rodgers is simpler? Like, he's the simple solution.
He is now.
Yeah. Well, they don't have.
I mean, all you have to do with him is just sign him. Right. Right.
If he'll sign. I mean, if he's not in the middle of his darkness retreat, you know, to make a decision or not. Like, that's what makes it not. It's not as easy as just like, here's a contract. Go ahead and sign it. Let's move forward. It's a little bit more complicated than that.
Got to let the mushrooms wear off first. Yep. Clear mind. Right. Like, you have to take your time with it in that regard. But we'll have all of that for you today. We'll give away some HTO today as well. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up. When we return, we'll start with Quincy Ballard. That is devastating news for the Shockers. It's not all that unexpected. It's not all that unexpected, but it's devastating nonetheless. And we look at a roster now that has a lot of work to do in a year that will feel pretty desperate, quite frankly, pretty desperate next year for Wichita State and Paul Mills in year three. So we'll start there. The Quincy Ballard news yesterday. It's Sports Daily. We're just getting revved up here on a Wednesday. What day is it? On a Wednesday. And we're coming right back.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Thanks to Crestview Country Club for their great sponsorship of this show. Glad to have that sponsorship. Glad to have it as we get ready to go play some golf. I played yesterday out there. Here's how I do it, Tommy. I know you get your 18. I went out and I played 9 yesterday, and it took about, I don't know, hour and 15 minutes, maybe. Hopped out there, played 9 real quick, and continued on with my day. That's pretty nice. That's pretty awesome to be able to just buzz out like that, grab a cart and go.
How'd it go for you?
Not good. Not good. I'm hovering right there in the mid 90s. And I know that the thing that will shave the strokes away is being a better putter. So I need to work on that to some degree. That's one thing you don't want to be in a hurry for. I get it. The other thing is that's a mid-90s with a foot wedge in play. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I'm not hitting the balls that are absolute duff shot. So two things I have to fix this year in golf. No more total wasted, like mishit duff shots, and then be a better putter. You know, keep it to no, you know, only two putts or less. And that'll I think get me where I want to be. So that's what I'm kind of working on.
You know, I had somebody one time, I was complaining about my game. I was talking to a guy that I know that's a really good golfer. And I was just complaining, you know, I'm like, man, I can't do this. And I wish I could do this better. You know, I need to improve in this part of my game. And he looks at me and he goes, yeah, that all sounds really good. How often do you practice? And I was like, well, I mean, I don't. I mean, I just come out and play. He's like, how do you expect to ever get better if you don't practice? And I'm like, you know, that's actually a really good point. And so honestly, like I started trying to do that more, like just go spend an hour putting,
yeah,
which is not fun to do necessarily. I'd rather just go play golf. Right. But that kind of changed my mindset.
It does help. And I don't know what to do to get, like, cause when I go to the range, I do that and like, I'll hit everything, you know, 15 straight balls, clean hits, great hits. And then I get out to the course and it doesn't translate. So we're working on it. We're working through it. Glad I got Crestview to get out there and give it as many holes as I can cram in at a time. But we appreciate that. We got a wine tasting this week with my wife. It'll be interfering with March Madness, but that's okay. They'll have games on the TV. And so it'll be good. Thanks to Crestview. We're going to have cool opportunities, by the way, in the coming months of how you can get out there and play some golf and check it out. So we'll be looking forward to that. That'll be coming. All right, Tommy, let's talk college hoops. Not the Sweet 16 yet, which we will talk about, but about the Shockers losing Quincy Ballard. Is it unexpected that we get the news yesterday he's transferring out, even though we believe he should have another year of eligibility coming? No, it's not surprising, but it's devastating. There was always the chance a guy that stuck it out in the program for a long time through a lot of stuff, through injuries and coaching change and all of these things. Now to go, as you really saw the light bulb go off late in the year last year, that is tough. He will be highly, highly, highly coveted. So it shouldn't surprise you for that reason. But it still sucks because he was going to have to be a building block for you. I mean, it is really Corey Washington or bust now for Wichita State. They have to keep him. They just don't, you know, that depth that they returned a year ago, that retention, it's like all Corey Washington.
Well, it's
now.
Gone.
That's
gone.
That's all they've got.
Yeah, it's gone. I mean, obviously with graduations and, you know, players aging out of the program, and then you've got the Quincy Ballard transfer news. I mean, yeah, they've got to maintain Corey Washington in the program. He has yet to make a decision, or he has yet to at least release a decision if he's made one. I would imagine that's coming sooner rather than later would be my guess on that. You know, just because the portal is heating up and a lot of players are either they've either already made their decision to leave their school or they're knocking on the doorstep of doing that. But to your point about Quincy Ballard, yeah, I mean, he's absolutely a cornerstone of this team, of this program, and had been a guy that you could build on as a reliable piece in that front court. And now you don't have that. And I think it's a combination of things. I think number one, as you mentioned, Washington is going to be highly coveted, not just by your run of the mill college basketball program, but I think high major elite programs are going to be wanting Quincy Ballard services on their roster.
No question.
And so I think that the allure of that, the pull of that, you know, is probably something that, you know, it's hard to ignore if you're Quincy Ballard and if you're his agents and, you know, if you're the people that are, you know, guiding him, that's hard to resist. And then along with that comes more than likely probably more money, than, you know, I'm sure Wichita State can probably give him. That's a guess. That's a speculation. We don't know. I don't know for sure how much money, you know, are in the coffers of the Wichita State NIL versus what he could probably go out there and land with another program. That's just a guess of mine. I don't know. And I'm not going to sit here and say that I think that that was the driving force behind it, because we don't know what the motivation is of this kid. But I think that more than anything, it's the allure of playing for another high major program. It's not the first time that something like that's happened to a Wichita State player, and it won't be the last time.
Well, no, and look, like there's a lot of opportunity involved either. I don't think anybody can look at Quincy Ballard and challenge his dedication to the program. He is a senior. He might find another year of eligibility, go to use it somewhere, but he gave the Shockers a lot of years. You know, he stuck with them. They stuck with him on, you know, through some injury things, and he had a great year last year.
And he stuck with them in the middle of a coaching change.
That's correct. So nobody should challenge Quincy Ballard's right. dedication to the Shocker program. Great Shocker, one of the great bigs, honestly, of all time. All that being said, don't you feel like there's more production there for Quincy Ballard?
Sure.
And I think that probably has something to do with it as well. you know, for whatever reason. Like, I imagine, and we'll ask for his Lotta, like, I imagine somebody with his athleticism and body type with the in the KU offense over the years and seeing, like, what they've been able to do at that spot with that kind of player. Like, I think there are going to be interesting opportunities out there for Quincy Ballard. And, yeah, there are probably going to be financial things out there for Ballard, too. We don't know that. That's the hard part.
Yeah, it's a speculation. Like, you know, like, you can look at, well, you know, right, the NBA, yeah, or the NFL, and you can tell exactly, like, this player went to do this to go get X amount of dollars. Yeah. That we don't really know that in, you know, in this world. But, I mean, along with playing potentially for an elite program nationally, you would think, logically, there would be a good amount of money coming along with that, maybe more than what Wichita State could pay him.
Sure. And that, and maybe not. When, I mean, we know the NIL is in a better position than it was 3 or 4 years ago when they basically didn't, right, have one. So, like, that part of, and retention last year reminds you that NIL is in a pretty good place, right? They brought all these guys back. Ballard, I would imagine that Ballard's is more to do with, like, opportunity to go do something special. If you want to play in the NCAA tournament, if you want to do all of those things, it's going to be less of a stretch if and when he lands somewhere else. So I get it, and it's fine. He's been a great shocker. It sucks, though, for this program because they needed to build around him next year. They will have to basically replace, at best, 80% of their starting lineup from a year ago. We were hoping it'd be 60%, right? And now it's 80%. And so that part of it gets really, really difficult to swallow if you're a Shocker fan, because now you're in year three with Paul Mills. Like, this has got to be the year. Eighth place in the American is not going to be good. I don't care who's on the roster. Year three of the program, eighth place in the American is not going to be good enough next year. So there is a lot of added pressure now to go and get it put together quickly. There's that pressure for coaches all across the country. Like, that pressure exists everywhere. It's not unique to Wichita State, right? Like, it's what everybody's dealing with. Unfortunately, the transfer portal still opens too early, even after they moved it back a week. We should not be doing this while the NCAA tournament is being played. I don't care what anybody says. And yeah, there's going to be backroom deals made. There already are. Don't care. Doesn't mean you shouldn't at least try.
At least, like, say, maybe pretend that we're not doing, right, this, like, at, no, the same,
we
time.
We're not going to start, yeah, this process until the tournament is done. It is so unfair to the teams still playing and the players playing for those teams. Not only the players that might transfer out, they could be tempted while they're trying to focus on this, but that their coaches have to also be paying attention to the portal when they should be only focused on this group. Like, you're forcing the coaches to do that. That's where it's like, come on, guys. Like, what difference does it make if you don't open the portal for another 2 weeks? Right? The conversations being had are being had anyway, but at least maybe it takes some of the pressure off and some people follow the rules. It's just ridiculous. Like, why are we doing this? Like, of all the simple things to do with the transfer portal and the NIL, like, all the simple things you can do to make it better, that's the simplest. Stop opening it before the season's done.
It's the same thing with college football. I mean, you've got bowl games going on, you know, and CFP games and all of that at the same time that the transfer portal opens in college football. Like, it just seems to be an easy calendar fix, an easy scheduling fix. Like,
yeah, just, college football's is their own mess,
just,
because
just make
they
that
wait
change.
Like, a month and a half, right, to play.
Yeah.
But basketball doesn't wait any. They just, right, keep playing.
Yeah. You know, going back to the Ballard situation, I'm disappointed that he is leaving Wichita State, or at least entering the transfer portal, because I like Quincy Ballard a lot. And you know, because he had been kind of that constant, you know, that foundational cornerstone for this team in the post. Yeah, I'm going to miss him for sure. And he was a really, really good Shocker. I think I read Taylor Eldridge's article yesterday, and I might get this wrong. I think he had the most double-doubles in a season for the team, like, going back I don't know, 13 or 14 years. Like, he had a lot of production on this team and had been for a while. And the dedication and the loyalty that he showed the program, sticking around through the transition from Isaac Brown, you know, to Paul Mills, that doesn't happen a whole lot in college basketball anymore. And so I don't begrudge him for wanting to go and potentially find opportunity elsewhere. And there will be a lot of teams that will for sure want his services, and he should have the pick of the litter. So I don't begrudge him for it, and I'm not surprised by it. I am disappointed. But here's the other thing, and this goes back to something you mentioned a moment ago, and I think it's true. I don't think that there were a lot of points in the season where you, at least offensively, where you felt like the offense ran through Quincy Ballard.
No.
And I think in retrospect, should the offense have ran through Quincy Ballard more? When you look at the production that he did, even though he wasn't the key focal point offensively for this team, I don't know. I mean, maybe there needed to be a little bit more opportunity for him in the post. I don't know if it ultimately would have changed anything. I don't know if his decision would have been different at the end of the day, or if he still would have felt that pull to go potentially to another program that, you know, is maybe a little bit more elite than Wichita State is right now. I don't know if it would have changed anything at all. But if it was, you know, a decision about opportunity, maybe there could have been a little bit more opportunity for him in the season, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so, but I don't know that I believe that's his game. So I don't want to say that, because I think people will, and I don't think you're saying this either, I think people will immediately think, oh, that's the coaching staff's fault for not making him a bigger part of the offense. I don't think it's their fault, because they're trying to win games, and I'm not sure that that would have been the best strategy. He needs to still develop as an offensive player. A lot of that work's going to be done now, not while they're actually playing games. So that all, I will be pretty surprised if Ballard doesn't end up in a place that has a history of taking a position that's not as popular as it once was, right? Like a true center. And teaching him a little offense in the offseason to get him ready for next year. He'll always be a defense rebounding first guy. He's a specimen. That's what he does. So I'm not going to say Wichita State should have given him more shots. I'm not sure that I believe that would have been their best path to winning more games. And right now, all Wichita State needs to be doing is trying to win more games, because they finished eighth place in the American last year. That's not good enough. They have to do everything they can to win games. So he could, yes, he could find that opportunity somewhere else. And yes, I think that absolutely is probably the main reason he's leaving. But I don't want people to think like, oh, it's the Shocker's fault for not giving. I don't know that I believe that, because I don't know that that would have been the case last year. You wish it would have been the case going into the year, I suppose. But now they have a roster that's full of a lot of question marks. Again, you hope. They can keep Corey Washington. Barton's got a junior college player, Keandre Kendall, who is, I believe they may have lost yesterday, but was playing in the NJCAA championship tournament up in Hutch. He comes in with a lot of experience.
I think he's a top five JUCO player in the country, I believe.
Eldridge lists him. Eldridge does a great job with the roster grid. If you want to go find it, it's on his X. It's real easy to find. Eldridge called him the number 13 JUCO prospect in 2025. But that's fine, right? Like, you're going to need those kinds of players. Then, of course, they have Zion Pipkin and TJ Williams, both top 150-ish recruits. Remember that, because that, and I bring this up to people all the time, top 150 recruits is where Greg Marshall lived in the recent glory days of the Shockers. Like, outside of a handful of guys, Marcus McDuffie, the later guys that all transferred out were a little more highly touted, like Etienne, but then Burton and Eric Stevenson. Those guys were just a little bit higher. But a lot of the bread and butter for the Shockers were that 150 range, outside of like Van Vliet and McDuffie. Like, a lot of their players lived in that range. So that's not a bad range. I always look at that as like, okay, top 150s. Wichita State's had a long history of good players coming from.
You know, Marshall, to his credit, developed them extremely well.
Yes, he did.
That's why it worked, because that coaching staff developed. And I'm not saying Paul Mills can't do that.
But we haven't had enough time.
We don't know if he can or not. But that, it wasn't just like, oh, they found diamonds in the rough, you know, in that area, and they picked well. They developed those guys extremely well.
Well, they recruited the right players until the very end. And a lot of those guys toward the end, as you got more, you know, more on paper talented players, he had a whole lot more issues too. We haven't had a chance to see that from Mills yet because he took in his first year's team and then he kind of brought everybody back. So we don't know how his development of young players is going to go. We're going to find out this offseason because they're just going to have to use them. It sucks to see guys like Jerome Pierre leave and then go flourish the way he has this year. But yeah, we're going to find that out. This will be the Mills offseason to learn about how he's been developing these young players for sure, because they don't have as many returners blocking all the minutes to be played. Joey Adovija, he is also back. He's the only one of these guys we're talking about who actually played a little bit this year. And then you've got the young crew coming in, which includes a couple preferred walk-ons, but then you've got a three-star that I don't know anything about in Tyrus Rathen-Mays. Nothing. I don't recall his recruiting. And then Noah Hill is kind of in that top 150 range out of Sunrise. So those are true freshmen, though. So you've got a bunch of true freshmen, a couple underclassmen in Williams and Pipkin, and then three upperclassmen, essentially, in Washington, Joy, and Kendall. That's a pretty clean palette. You can look at it any way you want to. That there's not a lot, and that's if Washington comes back. Boy, we need that announcement.
Well, and look, it depends on if you are an optimistic person or a pessimistic person. If you're a glass half full or glass half empty, because it's either a blank slate, and you can, you know, if you're Paul Mills and you're an artist, you can paint your own picture and whatever. So, like, that's the positive way to look at it. Or it's like, man, the cupboard is pretty bare. And so, where do you go and you know make those moves and make the changes to be able to still do what you need to do next season? It's going to be fascinating. I think that there will be opportunities for good transfer players to come in.
One of our great listeners, viewers, consumers is Rick on YouTube. And sometimes I just want to give Rick a hug, Tommy.
I think he woke up on the wrong side of the bed. Or I think he might be grumpy this morning.
Sometimes I want to give Rick a hug. He does not like the way college athletics are now. He says, I doubt Washington stays. You all think this portal is so great, though. Like, you think this portal's so great.
Why don't you marry the portal?
Rick, we love you, man. Like, it's not that we think the portal is so great. Nobody likes it. It's just the right thing.
And it's reality. Right? It's not changing. Yeah. So I'm not going to, like, you know, scream at the heavens about it every day. Like, it's the reality in which we have to operate in.
Until you put players under contract, this is like, legally speaking, if you are a free market capitalist, this is the only way. Until they get some things in place to, you know, to properly get we're on our way. We're getting there, right? We're going to get revenue sharing. And this is not going to be, nobody said this would be easier on the universities, but universities have been functioning and operating largely on the backs of major college sports for a very long time. Like, I don't need a lecture from a university until tuition rates don't stop going up, right? Like, I find it very hard, not for the individuals working within it. I have a ton of sympathy, tons, for the individuals working within it and how much harder it is now to do it. What I don't have sympathy for are universities that come out, and I'm not even calling anybody out, but the idea that these poor old universities don't have any more money. Like, guys, like, stop, like, don't, like, let's not talk about that, because we can't even afford to send our kids to college anymore. You know, like, I don't need to have that conversation. So the athletes that have driven the revenue and been very unfairly compensated for years and years and years, basically for eternity, like, them being able to have some freedom, make some money, move around, and put themselves in a best position to succeed while they're still generating all the money for the university is just fine. It's just fine, right? Like, we don't make our law students not be able to switch schools if they don't like the law degree they're getting from some individual university. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
On top of that, we don't beat up coaches for leaving and going to another school whenever they want to. Ben McCollum,
they're under contract, so I'll beat up coaches for that.
Left Drake after a year to take an opportunity to go and coach at Iowa. And there was a buyout, and obviously that was all taken care of and, you know, whatever. But, like, there's always been a double standard where you've got these coaches that are able to just bounce around, hop around, do whatever they want to do. There's no, like, oh, like, they're not loyal anymore. They don't. It's just like, oh, there's a better opportunity. They can make more money. They can go coach a bigger program. All right, cool. Like, they're moving up in their career. No big deal. Go and do that. It should be the same for the athletes, and it is. We're getting to that point. It's not, to your point, I totally agree with you. It's not where it needs to be, but it's at least steps in the right direction. And I believe that college athletics, it's going to get there. I think the reason why it's taking longer and it's so slow is that the NCAA is being drug along, kicking and screaming throughout all of this. They don't want any of this to happen. And so they're doing their damnedest to try to make sure that, like, things don't move and, like, slowing it down throughout the process. That's what's taking so long. And that's why it's not where it needs to be with the guardrails and all of that in place. But I think eventually, you know, push comes to shove, it will get there.
It will get there. It's still going to take time, and all we need to do is what we do with coaches. I mean, it's that simple, right? You put in contracts, and if players break the contracts, they've got buyouts. You want to leave after a year? Great. You can buy it out. You want to get compensated?
Or your school, the school that you're going to, can buy it out. And that, you know, then there becomes a decision.
I don't care who buys it out.
But that's the way it works with coaches. Like, the new school buys out the coach's old contract, you know, to be able to have that coach go. Like, and that would make, you know, a decision for the university maybe a little bit more difficult. Like, do we like this guy enough to buy out his contract with his current school, as opposed to, like, well, it's free game, we can grab whoever we want to. Well, no, now you've got a decision to make about, do we actually want to spend money, more money than what we would have to do anyway, to buy out the contract of this player that we really want?
It solves that issue. All you have to do is put in a simple provision that, with the exception of a coach leaving, right? With the exception of a coach leaving, then you get, I think everyone would like the players to have the ability to leave when a coach leaves. I don't think anybody can test that. And then the other part of it is, you know, you get together with conferences, you tie it all together that way. And then if there's tampering, which there very clearly is, which is probably the biggest issue of this, now you've got, like, legal binding documents so you can go sue somebody. You want to call our players while they're under contract for us this year? Great. We'll come after you in a lawsuit. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to say simplest, because that is insanely naive of me. That is not the right adjective. But it is the easiest to comprehend of all of the things, the way to handle this. You put players under contract. If they want to break their contract, there are financial penalties to do it, just like the coaches. And you do it based on conference, I think, right? I think you do it based on the league. Here's how this particular league's contracts are structured. That's the only way. But as far, you know, like, I think the transfer portal is annoying. Like, I don't as a fan, I don't like it. I don't think any fans like it. But as a human and as a working professional, like, you cannot hold these players hostage like this anymore. And that's why, it's why they lose every time in court. Every single time they lose, for a reason. And until you get proactive with it, they're just going to keep losing. And they're going to keep losing, and these court battles are going to keep coming. You might as well just get out ahead of it. Like, sit down with all the people in play. Sit down with the leagues. Sit down with the NCAA. You're going to have to get lawmakers involved. And here's how this works. Here's how this system needs to be put in place. We'll change it down the road, but here's how it needs to happen. We can't continue to have this level of tampering. We can't continue to have this level of movement. There is a business interest involved for these universities, but until they bring the players up to relevant players on the business end, they can't treat it that way. They have to continue this novelty that this is still amateurism and all these things. To me, it would be so much simpler if they just didn't treat it as that. Like, it's not amateur anymore. It never was, at least not in the last 50 years, not at the levels of you know, play that we're talking about right now. So treat it as a business. Hey, we've got a major tamp, like we've got some real big, you know, legal business issues happening with our whatever, with our sports. Like we got to figure out a way to regulate this a little bit. It doesn't just go, this isn't all player. There are interests of universities that I consider with this stuff too. Like you put a lot out on the line when you've got boots to the pavement and you're trying to raise funds and you're trying to hire people and you're trying to do all this stuff. And it just walks right out the door scot-free.
And how many fewer players would transfer every year, would enter a transfer portal if they knew that they may end up being on the hook to have to pay out a contract, right? Or like find a school that would be willing to buy out a contract. Like I may have interest from another university. And they may say, look, I'd really like to have you, but man, your buyout is too high. Like, we're not going to be able, like, you're welcome to come and play here with us, but we're not going to be able to afford to buy you out and get you a new contract. And, you know, at that point, well, maybe I'll just stay at the school that I'm at right now. I'm under contract with them. It's not worth it to me financially to buy out that deal.
Now, if this were to happen, and I think it's the only thing I can think of, there will be schools each year who will be willing to pay it, and you will have a situation where some schools are more equipped. But I'm telling you right now, that already is the case. Certain schools can afford to pay coaching buyouts. Certain schools cannot. Like, there's already that discrepancy that's always going to be there. I think what you'll, like, and the levels that will really suffer would be the, you know, the non-power leagues or like Drake. Or even lower, right? If you go down even lower, those schools aren't going to be able to enforce that level of contract. So they're going to continue to lose their players. It's just part of it, right? They already do. They already do. But what you wouldn't see are all the power, like basically entire rosters enter the transfer portal. If you want to enter the transfer portal and you play in the Big 12, it's going to cost you, right? Like you get to do it if your coach leaves. Some people think there should be one free one. I'm going to tell you right now, I am as pro player as anybody on the planet. If these players are under contract, you don't get any free ones unless a coach leaves. I'm not giving you a free transfer. If I'm putting you under contract and I'm paying you and you're getting a part of the revenue share, no. Now you have my attention when I say you are important to our marketing, we have built your brand. We are like, no, you don't get any free ones. And I am totally fine with that if you're under contract and being compensated.
Well, and think about the way that things have moved from when NIL first started. I mean, it was like literally a way for players to be able to go and, you know, make external money by doing things that used their name, image, and likeness, right? It was marketing deals, endorsement deals that they were going and securing on their own with third parties that were able to compensate them to do that sort of thing. That was kind of the way that it originally, and it was all separate from the university, right? Like that was made very clear. Like the guardrails initially were that this was, you know, not affiliated with the university officially. And now we've started to move, you know, towards where, no, it is affiliated with the university. It's under the umbrella of the university so they can protect it. They can, you know, make sure that, you know, things are being done on the up and up and blah, 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 and all of that. And that's fine. But we've even seen in the last few years, the way that, you know, NIL and compensation has evolved. We're not done evolving. I don't like the transfer portal because it makes it impossible to set expectations for future years. You have no idea. Even like, let's say that Corey Washington doesn't come back for the Shockers next season and they have to replace their entire roster, their entire rotation. They could go out and get great portal players, players that did great at their schools last year. There is absolutely no way to set expectations on what that team will be until we actually watch them play. No way to do it. That's what the transfer portal has done. I don't like it. I don't like that that's where we're at right now for that in that regard, but it's the right thing to do, at least in moving the needle forward and making sure that players are compensated fairly and appropriately.
Yeah, I'm with like Bill Self. It is going to settle down, but they have to navigate the tricky waters of the legal system, what's legal, what's fair, what's right. Like You just have to get there. And they will. And they'll figure it out. And you're going to see more power go to the leagues and than there already is. And whether we're comfortable with that or not, it's the only way this can work. And the thing that we just, like, the other big thing that people just have to understand is it's not going to be the same for football and men's basketball and women's basketball as it is for baseball, as it is for rowing. And those other sports can still operate the way that they have, right? Like, that we're talking about two totally different dynamics and worlds here. Maybe it's as simple as the money's just less. I don't know. But we can't stop trying to keep the tennis program and the football program on equal playing fields, because they're not on equal playing fields. And they can both coexist, I think, pretty easily. We'll come back. Another hour of Sports Daily coming your way. We got a lot to get to. We'll talk some Royals. We'll talk some NFL. We'll talk some March Madness. Keep it here.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. It's another hour of Sports Daily, and we are glad to be with you here on KFH. Thanks for being with us. One thing we will talk about in this hour, Tommy, is the stadium stuff with the Royals. It's taken a couple of turns here. We're hearing from the real estate group that owns the property up there, the old Sprint Complex or whatever it's called. So we're going to get you the latest on that. Don't worry. And it's a lot of it's been driven by our colleagues over at 96.5 The Fan, Bob Fesco in Kansas City. So what's happening here? What's going on? How much noise is there? Smoke, all that stuff. We'll get to that in our next segment. Shreyas Lada also going to join us this hour to talk KU. What's he hearing about the portal? Might they have any interest in Quincy Ballard? All of those things. Who's coming back? We'll get all caught up with Shreyas Lada. So now, Tommy, let's hit on these NFL storylines just real quick. And that are two yesterday. We've got Steph Diggs going to the Patriots. It's one of those really big, you know, $69 million, nice, contracts, but with only about a third of that guaranteed. So, you know, it's kind of a rental thing, and most likely in reality. You know, you see it at first, and you're like, why are the Patriots doing that? The more I think about it, the more I really like it. Like, they have to help Drake May. And if they've got the money burning a hole in their pocket, this kind of a deal for a player like Steph Diggs, who could really help Drake May, makes a lot of sense to me. I like it for the Patriots. I think it's a pretty smart move.
And who else, as far as offensive weapons are concerned on that roster, is a proving commodity? Because, I mean, there really isn't, right, as far as offensive weapons and playmakers on that roster. I know Max is our resident Patriots expert, and I don't think that there's a proven commodity offensively at all.
Ramondre Stevenson, who had kind of a bad year, right?
You know, so I like the move. I like them, you know, bringing in somebody that is that proven commodity and has been essentially his entire NFL career. Is he going to be the Steph Diggs that we saw in his prime in Buffalo? Probably not. You know, but I do certainly think
he was that before he got hurt last year.
He was really good. I mean, he's older. He's coming off, you know, a pretty substantial injury. So I think it's unfair to say that he will be the Steph Diggs of the past, but I certainly think that he can be reliable. And honestly, that's what Drake May and that's what Mike Vrabel and that's what the Patriots need. They need reliability as they continue this rebuild.
And Drake May needs to find out if he can be a good quarterback. And they're probably going to be in a position to take another offensive weapon or an offensive line. It's just like at some point you have to help these rookies. You have to. Or what are you wasting your time with? So when I initially saw it, it was like, God, why would they do that? They're not going to be any good. But then it was like, wait a minute. Why wouldn't they do that? Right? Like, why wouldn't they try to help him out? New coach, all of these things. I'm kind of thinking Drake May might work. Like, they got him the right coach in Vrabel. Like, the Patriots are kind of doing some good stuff, as much as they have a major talent deficit that they've got to overcome. Then you get the Russell Wilson one, which is far like sexier and meatier as far as like storylines and all of these things.
It is. I mean, Russell Wilson going to the Giants is sexy.
It's a sexier story, okay, because it involves quarterbacks and it includes the drama right now, okay, of these last couple of landing spots.
I don't ever want to hear you say Russell Wilson and sexy in the same sentence ever again.
You don't tell me what to do.
It's
you
so
don't
bad.
Tell me what to do. You just let me do my thing. Okay. I'll classify things. Sexy is one of my favorite adjectives, not for anything like it. They're not without like a physical component to it. I love to use it incorrectly. And I do it all the time. So sexy story, right? I think Terry Slayton said, Russ, let's ride or something. God, it's so funny. I mean, he's not going to do anything for the Giants. I'd rather have Jameis Winston if I'm the Giants. If I'm being perfectly honest, like if I'm a Giants fan, I'd rather Jameis Winston be the quarterback. But boy, does it have implications. Not just with Aaron Rodgers. It has implications on the draft. Where are these quarterbacks going to go, Tommy? Does anybody want these quarterbacks?
I think it's an indictment on the top quarterbacks in the draft. I mean, I really think it is because, you know, the Giants basically have, I think, cut themselves out of the running for Shedeur Sanders, for Cam Ward, if he's still available at number three. So I think it's an indictment on those quarterbacks, number one. But number two, even if you don't love either one of those quarterbacks, if you're the New York Giants, what do you have to lose at this point by using one of your, you know, using your number three overall pick? Thank you, Max.
I tried to find it in the system, but I had to go to YouTube.
Here we go.
I love it.
So Jacob, a lot of people call this my theme song. Back.
A lot of people say that.
I think of Russell Wilson when I think of this song. I don't know what they are, what they're thinking long term. I know they probably don't love either one of those quarterbacks, but what do you have to lose? Like, you would rather bring in a quarterback room of Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston than taking a swing. And I like, don't get me wrong, I'm not a big Shedeur Sanders guy. I'm not as big as you are, for sure. But what do you have to lose by taking a swing at one of these young quarterbacks? Because, like, the Giants are bad. They're a bad football team. They're not going to get any better with Russell Wilson or Jameis Winston at quarterback. So why don't you at least take a big swing, take one of these quarterbacks early, and at least see what you've got in one of them?
Because if it doesn't work, if they're not your quarterback, then you're wasting a lot of time with them. You know what I mean? Like, you have to do it, or you're just wasting your time. If you don't have the right quarterback and you draft a rookie, like, what are you doing at that point besides wasting your time? And so I think that you have to get it right. So if you don't like the quarterbacks, you don't take the quarterbacks. You do what they've done. I think they're wrong about Shedeur Sanders. I don't know about Cam Ward, but we see this in the draft every year. Oh, they have to take the quarterback. No, you don't. If the quarterback's not good, don't take the quarterback. We don't say that about other positions, right? Oh, they have to take the receiver that they don't like because they need a receiver. No, you don't take the quarterback unless you think the quarterback's going to be the right player. They clearly don't, I think.
But in this case, I know that Russell Wilson still has the deep ball ability, and I know that's kind of what he does, and that's about the only part of his game that he still has that's effective, I think. And then you've got Jameis Winston, who's going to give you excitement, whether it's good or bad. He's going to give you excitement on the football field. But I'm sorry. Like, you've got a young superstar in Malik Nabers on that team that's electric and so much fun. And you're not going to pair him up with a young superstar potentially in Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward. You would rather pair him up with a couple of guys at the tail end of their career. Like, what are we doing here? What, like, the Giants organization has gone from bad to worse, in my opinion, so mismanaged. And I used to be a big Brian Daboll fan, and I'm sure, and Max pointed this out, and I think he's right, Dable's on the hot seat. The GM's on the hot seat for sure. You know, and so I think they want probably something a little bit safer, a safer play than an unknown play at quarterback with a rookie quarterback or whatever. But man, like, you want to get a fan base excited. You want to get an organization excited.
But a fan base is excited about a quarterback being drafted for about 5 minutes if the quarterback sucks.
My point
Don't
is that
you think the Bears were excited for just a minute about Mitch Trubisky?
I think they're extremely excited about Caleb Williams and the young...
Because Caleb Williams is good.
But we don't know if Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward is that way. Like, we don't know. Like, the jury's out on them,
God,
for
I
sure.
Hope that they
I think the
think
jury.
They know.
My point is that, and I know it's not about getting the fan base excited. It's not about just winning the press conference. But at the same time, the organization needs a little bit of goodwill right now because they've been down in the dumps for quite a while. And here's the point. You have to also look at replacement value as well. Does anybody think that Russell Wilson or Jameis Winston is an upgrade over Daniel Jones? Because I certainly don't think so. Why not just keep Daniel Jones?
Well, because he was making too much money. I think that, yeah, that experiment, but he's a great example, right? Like, if you don't take the right quarterback, it doesn't matter that you took a quarterback. And I'm not saying that I trust their quarterback evaluation skills. I don't, right? Like, that's, they had Daniel Jones. I think that Shedeur Sanders is a fine pick at the top of this draft. Like, I'm not saying I think they're right. I'm just saying if they don't like the quarterback, they can't take a quarterback. You take the best player that you can take and you roll through a season with Russell Wilson and you have to kick the can down the road. I mean, you can't take Josh Rosen. You know what I mean? Like, just because you think you need a quarterback, you have to still get it right. And if they, what this tells me is they don't like either one of those quarterbacks. That's all it tells me.
I think it tells me too that, you know, they, number one, I agree with you. They don't like those quarterbacks, but number two, how bad do they think those quarterbacks are if they'd rather have Wilson or Winston at quarterback? Right.
I agree with that. And, or maybe they love another player, or maybe they love the idea of trading down. I mean, those are viable too. Like, if you think you're getting Abdul Carter and he's a generational Miles Garrett type talent, okay. You can sell me on that and stop. And you don't love the, but I'm telling you, I love Shedeur Sanders as prospect. Like, I think he's got a great chance to be what Baker Mayfield is. Let's call it that. If you knew everything about Bake right now that you know, Tommy, would you be comfortable taking him at the top of a draft?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I think I would.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I see with him. So, all right, we'll come back. We'll continue the conversations here on Sports Daily. Don't go away.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily. You want to win some HTO? Let's do that right now. All you got to do to win a free cup of tea, more than 26 flavors, all kinds of new stuff in there as well that you got to get in and check out. All you got to do is text the keyword T, T-E-A, 20357. That'll get you a cup of tea at either East or West Wichita or in Derby. Good luck, everybody. Message and data rates apply. You can enter once per day. Tommy, let's talk about this stadium stuff for the Royals. So a couple of days ago, Bob Fesco, 96.5 fan of Kansas City, or sister station up at Odyssey, reported that there are deep level conversations happening basically with the Royals in the Sprint Complex. And if they come to Kansas, like, that's going to be the place. Now, he never said they're coming to Kansas and that's going to be the place. He said they're honing in on that as the place if they come, I think. Don't paraphrase him. But that's the gist of it. Well, Then you get some following reporting done by the Business Journal up there that, you know, there's a downtown developer basically saying they're coming to Kansas. Then, you know, we had reporters see that and call some lawmakers and they're like, oh, no, that's not a done deal. Like, not at all. Like, there are a lot of things that still need to happen, even if the Royals are going to come across. But it was never that conversation is not happening, right? That was never the indication there. So then yesterday we get, and there is a release sent out from the people that run that Aspera site, however it's pronounced, that are from Occidental here in town, which there's a firm here in town.
It's based in Wichita. Occidental is a Wichita company.
Occidental is, yes. And they're saying there are not in discussions with the Royals. A lot of speculation. This is just a rumor. So, and then Fesco was out this morning and you sent me this, like, basically, and he's saying same thing I'm going to say right now. This is me saying this, not him. If you were a real estate company, Tommy, and you had tenants, I there's some damage control involved in something like that. Like, you don't want those people to think you're going to be done with them soon. And so, like, but they did come out and they said, hey, it ain't happening. It's happening. We've had lawmakers say they're, but there are a lot of,
we don't know that that's happening. Something is going to happen. No. We don't know that that's happening. Let's be clear about that.
Are happening.
Right.
Conversations are happening. And yeah, like, there was probably, there were probably ways that it was construed that yes, they are coming to this side across, that it's not, that's not what's happening. What's happening is it's being considered and they're talking about it, right? They're talking through their options on it. I mean, yeah. So I don't read too much into it. I think for all of this noise, the thing that you take away is not that they're going to play it there or that they're going to play it somewhere else, at least for us down here, because for us down here, doesn't make it a hill of beans, whether they play it at Legends, whether they play it at this, but we don't, I mean, who cares? We don't care. Like for real, I don't think anybody down here cares. The only thing we care about is that they're coming to Kansas or they're not coming to Kansas. And it sure sounds like there's a lot of momentum for them to come to Kansas. Honestly, more than I thought there would be. That this was all Chiefs driven. I didn't think there would be as much of an appetite for the Royals. But in the language of the Starbond stuff that got passed, it did say pro sports leagues. And there will be fewer concessions, I would guess, given to the Royals than there would be to the Chiefs. So there are going to be a lot of things that still have to be worked out here. It's not quite as simple as the Chiefs, where it's like, we'll do whatever you want, right? Come on over. Because you'd want the drafts, you want the chance at a Super Bowl, and you want all that stuff. Baseball, you're getting an outdoor stadium that's not quite as multi-use as a football stadium. Like, it's a harder sell. So they're happening. But I don't think they're anywhere close to being done on whether they're even coming over here. I don't think the Royals know where they're going to play baseball.
I mean, I do think that if you were putting odds down, at least this is just my opinion, I would probably say at this point, you're probably going to be laying odds that the Royals will ultimately end up in Kansas. As of right now, like, I think if you were to put money on it, you would probably be laying odds that the Royals will be in Kansas. Just with where all the smoke is right now, with where all the conversations have been, because, and I think this is a major important piece in all of this, it's really quieted down on the Missouri side as far as the conversations of potential locations and strategy meetings and lawmakers getting involved in different things and trying to figure out potential locations on the Missouri side. We haven't heard a lot about that. In a little bit, you know, there was all of that chatter and conversation months ago about Clay County. And then there was the conversation about Power and Light. Then there was the conversation about that. And I don't remember the name of the neighborhood. I'm not familiar with it, but that area that's kind of the historical area on the Missouri side where there were all of those old businesses that were probably going to have to be raised to be able to build the stadium right there on the Missouri side. Like, all of those conversations have kind of quieted down over the last few months. What has really ramped up has been the speculation about various sites on the Kansas side of the border. So right now, if I were putting money on it, you're probably not going to get very good odds, but if I were putting money on it, it would be that ultimately at the end of the day, a new Royal Stadium will probably be on the Kansas side.
I would agree. I would agree. If you're putting money on it, I would say the odds are better that they play in Kansas than in downtown Kansas City. I think there's more of an appetite for it, and I think it will become a better deal for the Royals. I think the Royals would prefer to play downtown.
I would prefer for them to play downtown.
I don't think downtown Kansas City has the appetite to do it.
I'm on the record. I think I've said this multiple times, and I'll say it again. Even though I'm a Kansan, and I would love to have a professional sports franchise, a Major League Baseball franchise in the state of Kansas, I think from a excitement level or a fan perspective, I would love to have a Power and Light Royals team. Like, I think that would be phenomenal. That'd be great. But there's not an appetite for it. And like, the lawmakers, and I think part of the reason why it's quieted down over the months is because the lawmakers have tried over and over and over again to get something through, to have the taxpayers foot the bill for it. And it's been soundly defeated over and over and over again. Like that sort of thing is not happening because there's not the mechanisms in place for that to be able to be pushed through without a taxpayer vote. And the taxpayers simply don't want it.
They don't. And here's why you also see, I think, them broken apart now with the Chiefs. I think lawmakers in Kansas City, and again, we're speculating. We gave you the stuff that's more like factual off of the beginning that, you know, Occidental has come back and said, oh, we're not talking, but we, you know, I know that one of our reporters talked to a lawmaker that's like, yeah, but they're a long way away. And we know Fesco's saying they're absolutely talking. So that's all that's happened. Now we're speculating. Okay. Just draw that line in the sand. We are strictly speculating here. Now, from here on, I think we may go back to that, but this is all speculation now. And this is trying to read between the lines and be intuitive. In the beginning, with the extension of the tax there that currently exists, that obviously tethers the Royals and the Chiefs together, right? That area clearly does not have the appetite to do that. Okay. Now it's like, if you break them apart, which is the natural thing that happens with that, I think the reason the appetite wasn't there, Tommy, is because the public isn't as it, like the Royals, it's like, yeah, I don't know if I want a sales tax for the Royals, right? I don't know if I want to do that. Okay. That's where you're going to see a natural breakup of the two organizations. They're not going to play in the same place. Now you've got a situation where if you're the Chiefs, and you can say, okay, let's try again, but it's only us this time. The public is far more likely to do that, I think, at a lesser amount, right? Because it's not two teams than it would have been. I think. I don't know that, and neither do the Chiefs, and neither does the state of Kansas. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. I would just say it's probably more likely to get through. But that leaves the Royals. Okay, and the Royals now have got to try to go downtown, which is where they've always wanted to be. You've got to at least exercise that, but it doesn't sound like, according to the Business Journal and other things, that's going to happen. And that would have to be, like, you'd have to get into, because not going to happen on the way that they tried to push through the first one. So you've got that, and whether the city can come up with something or not, you go on to the other side in Kansas, and you got a Starbond staring at you in the face. Because Kansas passed a law that said, for any pro sports teams, whatever, read between the lines. Right? Like, what is more likely for the Royals? To hammer something through in downtown Kansas City that the public does probably not have an appetite for? Or to come across the border to Kansas, get exactly what you want, probably get a better financial deal, and still draw from the Kansas City Metro? Read between the lines. Like, it's, you know, that's all we're doing here. Like, it's the circumstances have created this scenario where Kansas just might kind of accidentally stumble into a pro baseball team here. The Chiefs are a different story. We have to separate them now. Kansas City will fight much harder to keep the Chiefs than they have to keep the Royals. And so now we separate them, and it makes sense if you're the Royals. I mean, what would you do if it was you? I'd come to Kansas if I was the Royals. If there's a star bond on the table and I don't have to spend my own money, I'm coming to Kansas.
Well, absolutely, because keep in mind, like, there's no way – if on the Missouri side, if the city of Kansas City, Missouri, went to John Sherman and the Royals organization and said, Look, we really want to keep you. The plan is that we'd like to have you in this area. We'd like to do this, but we can't provide any kind of subsidy to make this happen. We can't provide you a new stadium. The taxpayers don't want a sales tax. We don't have any kind of mechanism to be able to provide you state funds. We can't do any of that. So we have this location. We want you to be on the Missouri side forever, but we can't really help you. We can't really do a whole lot, but we'd really like to have you. John Sherman's a businessman, first and foremost. He's a billionaire, first and foremost. All you have to do is go 20 minutes on the other side of the border, and all of a sudden you've got subsidies out the wazoo to be able to take care of a stadium for you on the Kansas side, and you've got a state and lawmakers in that state that have already passed legislation that basically outline a way to have a pro sports franchise in the state, and everything is already in place for that. You're absolutely going to go to the Kansas side for that. So as it relates back to what has happened over the last couple of days, yeah, like nobody knows for sure where it's going to happen. Is it going to be the old Sprint campus, Hesperia, or however you say it, at 119th and Dahl? I don't know. I mean, I believe Bob Fesco when he says that there are conversations that have been happening. I don't know how deep those conversations are. I don't blame Occidental Management for doing some damage control to make sure that their tenants are not panicking because all of a sudden there's reporting that they might lose their location. Is it going to be Legends? I don't know. There's already a Star Bond in the Legends area, so I don't know if that takes them out of the running or not. I don't think anybody knows for sure. They're exploring all options, but one thing I'll tell you is that John Sherman is a good enough businessman that he's, assuming it's on the Kansas side, they are going to pick the location that will be the most advantageous for them financially, whether that's from a Star Bond situation, from a location perspective, where they feel like they can make the most money. That's where this team is going to go, more than likely on the Kansas side.
Always, that's what they were going to do. Always, 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 always. Right? Always, that's what they were going
and
to
so
do.
And so if that's 119th and all, if that's where they feel like they can make the most amount of money, okay, so be it. I don't think they're at that point yet.
No,
but so be it.
Yeah, they're not at that point yet, but that's where we get into this, right? Is it that side? Is it? And I don't know that. That's a good question. That's a good way to look at it. That's a good question. I mean, their cost, I think, to do it is probably less in play than the state's desire to put them in a particular place, I think. I think, you know, when the Star Bond's on the table, it's probably going to be less about what the Royals want to do and more about where the state wants to put them. Because you've already got Star Bonds in play in a couple of these places, maybe less so in others. Like, the state has some power here too, Tommy, to say, like, we don't want you up there. That Star Bond doesn't make as much sense for us. We want you down here. Now, what are you going to do to get this to happen? You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's as simple as the Royals can come over and just go cherry pick what they think is their favorite place. Because if the state's going to put in a Star Bond, you have to, as a state, say, this is going to generate enough money, right, through taxes, through a special tax, a use tax, not an income tax, to generate and pay for itself. So I think you have to pay attention to that. I think. And we'll see. And again, this is all the speculative part. This isn't, you know, if I'm a lawmaker right now having a conversation with the Royals, quite frankly, I don't really care where the Royals want to put it in Kansas. We're already going to give them a ton of money. We're going to tell you where we think your placement does our state the most good. And certainly the Royals will have something to say about it. That's not what I mean. But what I mean is, if there is any power from the state, that's got to be where it is. If you're the state and you're a lawmaker and you're going to rubber stamp this, you cannot let them just come in and put it somewhere where you don't think it's going to pay itself off. You can't. You cannot do that. No way you can do that. Right? Like, you can't.
I think you have to make sure that wherever they end up in the state of Kansas, that Kansas has to be very, very cautious that they're not reckless with it. And I don't think that they have been reckless with this pursuit of whether it's the Royals or the Chiefs. But I do think that there is the risk that you could go from being aggressive to being reckless. If you just start throwing Starbonds out there, you know, like candy, right? Like at that point, then it becomes a risk to the state of Kansas. And I'm not well versed enough in state finance and taxes and that sort of thing to be able to tell you where I feel like that line is from being aggressive to being reckless. I don't think a pursuit of the Royals across the border in Kansas in general is reckless. I certainly don't think a pursuit of the Chiefs on the Kansas side is reckless, but I do think that if you don't have discipline with it, you can't just like basically say, hey Royals, hey Chiefs, we'll give you whatever you want to come over here. Like, we just want you in Kansas, so we will give you everything you could ever want. I'm not sure that's the path. I do think that you're in an advantageous state because you know that your counterpart across the border can't match what you can do as far as Starbonds is concerned. So that does give you a leg up. So I do think that from a negotiation standpoint, I think you can be a little bit firm on the needs from your state. So I don't exactly know. Again, I'm not well versed in this enough to know. I think that you can be aggressive, but you can't be reckless if you're the state of Kansas either.
And they're not going to be with the Royals. They'd be reckless with the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Make no mistake. The upside is high. With the Royals, you can be very specific with what you want to do. I would be if I was a lawmaker, because it ain't my money, right? Like, where can we put the Royals that they will benefit our state if we are going to gift them this star bond? So we're a long way from anything. But this has all been being talked about a great deal this week, right as we get ready for opening day for the Kansas City Royals. That's tomorrow, and we can't wait for it. We're going to do a full, like, deep dive extravaganza with the Royals tomorrow that we're really looking forward to.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, we welcome in Trius Lotta. You can find his work at KC Star, KU Beat Reporter. You can follow him on X at SHRE98. Trius, it is portal season. I don't know how much you enjoy portal season. It is one of the craziest seasons for somebody in your line of work. How's it been so far?
Chaotic. Just trying to figure out what's going on, reaching out to agents. Always my least favorite thing is trying to figure out if these guys are going to talk to me or not. A lot of no responses and stuff like that. But then you get the guy who doesn't have an agent yet, like a high school coach, and it's a refreshing conversation because they're not, you know, hiding anything. but yeah, it's been fun and chaotic and a lot to pay attention to because Kansas is definitely busy.
Do we know anything of substance yet from this roster? Because I've not seen, you know, really anybody make a definitive decision as far as whether or not they're entering the portal that are potential returners for Kansas.
Yeah, no, nothing definitive yet. I had a story a couple of days ago kind of mapping out where things are at with a couple of different guys. Like I mentioned in the story, Diggy Koyce, a situation that's interesting where obviously there's interest on his end and there's interest on Canada's end for them to eventually come back. But in the benefit of getting better and him kind of being a liability on defense, there could be a parting of the ways depending on how the roster construction goes out for Kansas. Another one was Flory that I know some rumors have come out. Maybe he was interested in the portal, but I was told that definitively on Sunday that there was no such chance that he would enter the portal. Obviously, things can change. That was Sunday. You know, we know how things are. And the current plan is for him to take a week off basketball, then meet with KU coaches and discuss. And if it goes all according to plan, they expect him to be a building block for Kansas next year alongside Peterson. So unless something changes, which it could, we know how things are in the portal and, you know, how people are nipping at the butt, I'm sure, to get him from other schools. Right now, I don't think Flory is going to leave the Jayhawks. Store and Ryland are probably the two contenders, I think, if I were to pick. Hey, I think these guys could go. Another one is Zach Clements. I mean, Clements almost left before last season, but he decided to stay. The year before that, he flirted with going to Santa Barbara, but ultimately came back. If he wants playing time and a real opportunity to play minutes. I'm not sure he's going to get that at Kansas next year. He didn't get it much this year, even when he was healthy. Obviously, he had the groin injury for the second half. So just a couple of those guys on the roster I've been paying attention to.
So with Flory, because I think it all starts there, is the draft an option at all? Like, is he getting any of that kind of love? So this is pretty much college basketball, it sounds like.
Yeah, there's no, you know, I talked to a couple of different draft guys that I know in the business throughout the season, and nobody really has him on their boards, you know, at the moment. Like, if he declared, because of his age, I'm sure he could draft it like late second round because of the injury there. But there really wasn't much, you know, from Flory besides a couple of games of production where I think teams or evaluators felt like, hey, he's a definitive lottery pick. Like, you know, we knew Furphy was getting lottery buzz when he started to play. Grady had lottery buzz the entire season he was at Kansas. There was none of that with Flory, besides maybe a brief moment. And the guys who had Flory on their board, you know, were really more Twitter or amateur guys, you know, and obviously sometimes they tend to be ahead of the curve 6 or 7 months before the national guys catch up. So that's a little bit of that. But from what I understand with the situation with Flory is it was always expected to be a multi-year thing. You know, that's what I was told in the last summer. You know, he didn't expect to be a one and done guy. I mean, he was going to go out there, compete with Hunter and KJ and Zach Clemens and get better. And then ideally you come back and he's the starter next year alongside Darren Peterson. And if things go well, they both could be lottery picks.
Speaking of Darren Peterson, how much pressure does Peterson have on his shoulders next season? You know, especially considering the way that the last two seasons have gone. And, you know, I think that there are a lot of folks in the fan base, at least, that are looking at Peterson as kind of the savior of the program, like a palate cleanser after what has happened the last couple of years. How much of that pressure do you think will end up on his shoulders?
I mean, I think there's an immense amount of pressure, right? The reality of the situation is KU's looking at him and people have made the comparison. I don't know if we're quite there yet, but he's their Cooper Flagg. You know, for better or worse, they're going to ride Peterson. I think Bill Self had a comment a couple of weeks ago talking about Peterson, where it's like, if Kansas has the season he thinks and that Duke had this past season, he's going to get the lion's share of the credit. And the inverse is also true. If Kansas disappoints next year or goes in not a top three seed and, you know, they lose out in the first or second round, there's going to be a lot of pressure on him that way. But the reality thing is, we know he's gone after a year, guys. You know, unless something catastrophic happens, he's going to be gone after a year. So Kansas finding the right pieces to fit around him is going to be so important, because that fit thing in self-system, and I mentioned this on Twitter today, it's not just about talent anymore. It's about having guys that fit around Peterson, but also not too many guys who are just do one or two things well. I feel like that's the big thing that I've noticed this year, last couple of years, is you have too many of those guys who just do one or two things well. So if they don't do it well, then what are they doing out on the court?
Yeah. Okay, let me ask you this then. If how much wiggle room is Bill Self going to allow with those two guys? Because if it's those two guys, it's a true freshman and a raw sophomore who we didn't see the full potential of. He's not going to build that program around that next year.
Well, you know, I think he's going to bring in some veteran guards. They've been linked to Josh Dixon. I just put out a story. They reached out to Donovan and from New Mexico State – or New Mexico, sorry. And he's going to be a big get if they can get him. Every blue blood has reached out to him and his high school coach recently. He averaged 20 a game. He's a Mountain West Player of the Year. If Kansas can get him – it'll be big for Kansas, but I think this can be a difficult decision. But we should find out in the next couple of days. I was told he could make a decision as soon as this weekend. So I presume what they'll do is bring in some veteran guards, because they need another guard alongside Peterson, even if they're not the primary ball handler. Having a guy that can score and facilitate like Donovan can, or Josh Dix can, either one of those guys would be great to kind of have in KU's arsenal. I presume what they'll do is the focal points of the team will be those two guys, but the complementary pieces will be the things that prop them up, I think, and could be guys who would be, you know, NBA level talent if they played at Kansas versus, you know, a guy like Donovan who played at New Mexico, who might not get as much shine.
Going back to the opening round loss in the NCAA tournament last week against Arkansas, It was basically a microcosm, that game, of the entire season for Kansas. Like, everything that had been ailing the Jayhawks throughout the year, sort of, it was encapsulated in that game against Arkansas. Poor clutch moments at the end, or unclutch moments, I guess, for the Jayhawks. Turnovers, I mean, back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back turnovers, it seemed like, down the stretch. Just a lot of those issues. And then, of course, you have the devastating injury with KJ Adams to close out that game. What do you think Bill Self's mindset was coming off of that game? Like, I would imagine from him, there was probably just a mentality of, like, thank God this is over with. Like, thank God we're done with this, and we can hopefully start fresh next season.
I think it's a little bit of that, but also a lot of appreciation for what the core three, especially KJ and DeJuan, gave those guys. I mean, gave Kansas for a couple of years. Obviously, it didn't expect anybody. I think anyone expected it to end like this, beginning of the season, like they would lose first round. But, you know, I could feel a lot of emotion from Self and in his press conference where he was talking about how KJ and DeJuan are sons to him. And I think it was a difficult thing where figuring out what's right for Kansas was also putting him in a tough spot where he clearly loved the guys, but they were flawed. And because they were flawed, you know, their issues were amplified, you know, roster construction issues. I mean, I've said it to you guys before. Two seasons ago, KJ Adams was the center of Kansas basketball, and they got the number one overall seed. Why? Because they surrounded KJ Adams, DeJuan Harris with three NBA level wings. When they brought in Hunter Dickinson, they essentially said, hey, this is the guy that we're going to build around. And it's difficult to build around Hunter Dickinson, easier said than done, and especially difficult when you have three guys who essentially are non-shooters. Even if Hunter shoots two threes a game, he's not enough of a threat where you don't feel like the spacing is clogged. It puts an immense amount of pressure on the other two guys then. Because then you're expecting Zeke Mayo and either a Rylan Griffin, AJ Storr, Kevin McCullough, whoever, the last 2 years, to kind of play up to a higher standard than I think most would have imagined. So I think in a way, having this fresh start will be great for Kansas, but also it'll be an opportunity to kind of see how Bill adapts with a new base. I mean, when we think about it, 80% of their starters are gone from last year, potentially 100%, depending on what happens with Rylan or AJ, right? So this is a new canvas for Bill Self, for him to paint on. It's completely blank. And, he has a number two recruit in the nation coming in. He has a guy like Semis Calderon, you know, also coming in freshman class, and Bryson Tiller, all good players. And then you have a couple of good returning guys who could play roles. Marco Jackson, Jamari McDowell, who could play heightened roles. We've seen it before. Guys miss a year, don't really play much, and they come out and they play like All-Americans or at least Big 12 player, you know, all Big 12 players. So I'm very intrigued to kind of see how the roster construction plays out, because it's finding that balance between fit and talent, but also playing the right way in Bill Self's system.
And how do you ever know that? I mean, are they going to play the right way? Didn't he do that with Rylan Griffin and AJ Storr? I guess tell me what the difference between Rylan Griffin and AJ Storr is to what you just described and what Bill Self said, which is finding the right fit. Did he not think those guys were the right fit and they just weren't?
I think the belief that Self had, especially with Storr, is Storr can learn how to be a winning basketball player. I mean, I asked him in November what the biggest difference between Wisconsin and Kansas was. It was, he was like, well, learning how to play winning basketball. To me, that was an alarming thing to say at that point in time. And I thought about it. I mentally kind of noted. I was like, okay, this could be an issue. For him, the leash was always small, but he was clearly there to be a scorer first because his defense was not good, right? And this is what I'm saying. Like, the right fit means minimizing guys where they're a liability on one end of the court. The right fit means having guys who are more well-rounded. Maybe they're not excellent at everything, but they're pretty good at everything. That complementary alongside a guy like Darren Peterson and Floyd Badunga could be so much better for Kansas. And I think Rylan, I mean, you know, I'd heard this candidly from, you know, some sources. If Rylan wasn't shooting well, what is he doing on the court? You know, there wasn't a lot he was giving out there. His defense wasn't particularly amazing. He wasn't rebounding the ball at a great clip. So then what's the point of having him on the court if he's not making threes at least a 35% clip? And AJ, we know he had a kind of a disastrous year. He obviously ended on a relatively high note, Big 12 play and the Arkansas game. But he never really figured out his role. His leash was small because his defense wasn't good enough. So I think going into this transfer portal madness is finding players that can play both ways, even if they aren't maybe the esteemed level of talent that these recruits or these recruiting sites say they are.
Okay, that's fair. One final question, and we just have like 1 minute. Quincy Ballard leaving Wichita State. He looks like a KU center. You think there'll be any interest there?
I definitely think so. I think there's a, you know, he's a local kid. You know, why not? Why wouldn't you go dig into your backyard to get something like that? There, he could play a backup center role to Florey. They clearly need a backup center. Maybe they even play, you know, I haven't seen Quincy play that much, but if he's a stretch five, you know, that he could play the five and Florey could play the four.
He looks the part. The only thing is, if he goes somewhere, it's got to be to play more. I just don't know. That'd be the only thing, but he sure does look like. We'll keep our eye on that. We'll find out. KU would compensate him well, but I don't know that it would be his most advantageous playing opportunity spot. We'll follow you, Shreyas. You're the guy here. We're just going to kind of track this thing through you. That's the only way I know how to do it, so we appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
There goes Shreyas Lotta. Find his work at the KC Star. That'll do it for us on Sports Daily. Boy, there's a lot of good stuff with Shreyas Lotta right there when it comes to the portal, Tommy. They will be as fascinating as any team in the country with the portal. If you missed anything from Shreyas, go back and listen to it on the Odyssey app, on demand, podcast form. It's right there for you. It's opening day tomorrow, Tommy. We got the return of the Sweet 16. I don't even know if I'm going to be able to go to sleep.
I'm so excited. I cannot wait for the show tomorrow. Cannot wait to watch baseball and college basketball all day tomorrow.
We will dig into the Royals. We'll also have Tim Fitzgerald in tomorrow. He'll help us with K-State and the transfer portal. What's happening there? Can Jerome Tang have another big portal year? It's all coming on a Thursday edition of Sports Daily. For Max, for Shreyas, for Tommy, I'm Jacob. We'll see you tomorrow.